Hey team, Richard Tubb here with another episode of Tubb Talk, the podcast for managed service providers. Now, long-time listeners to this show will know that I believe that the real power behind any managed service provider business is process and people. And today's guest has dedicated his entire career to enhancing processes, procedures, and empowering individuals for success through technology. Juan Fernandez is the Global Channel Chief at SuperOps, the next-gen platform for MSPs. Now, Juan is a former MSP. He's an investor. He's somebody whose achievements have been recognized across the industry. I'm going to make him blush here. He's been featured in CompTIA World magazine. He's been named Peer of the Year by Channel Pro magazine. He's been HP's DAS Innovator of the Year, CRN magazine's fastest growing MSP, ENX magazine's Difference Maker of the Year, Channel Futures DE&I 101 Leadership Recognition, 2022 Channel Influencer of the Year, and the illustrious CompTIA's 2022 Industry Advisory Leadership Award. Now, if I've got to take a breath just after giving this guy his flowers, you know he's going to be a fantastic guest. In short, Juan is the man in managed services. Juan, welcome to Tub Talk. How you doing, my friend?
Well, after all that, Richard, I don't know. My cheeks are blushing and I obviously need to trim that down in terms of the things that you can find out about me. So I'm happy to be here. I'm so honored and just really, really excited to have a conversation today and hopefully, you know, uncover some great value opportunities for MSPs that are joining us.
I know that will be the case. And I've long wanted you on the show. I never managed to pin you down when you were an MSP. but let's start from the present day and we'll move back. We'll work backwards from there if we may. So you're the Global Channel Chief at SuperOps. So explain to us, for listeners perhaps have not heard of them, who SuperOps are and what your role entails.
Yeah, so SuperOps is a next generation RMM PSA tool that's built upon artificial intelligence. And so when you're thinking about the things and the tools that you use in your daily business, you know, there are certain tools that are very important. And one of those cornerstone moments of the managed world is an RMM and a PSA. And so really, really honored to be part of helping build that and create that and move that forward. And you know, my role as the Global Channel Chief is you know, I head up all of the US, I head up partner channel, I also head up partnerships in terms of like integration components. So I have a number of roles. I oversee in the outbound sales motion, I oversee a lot of the community aspects, I oversee brand, I oversee a number of the sales roles and the way we approach the channel. I also oversee how product is designed and built. So I have a number of hats that I wear, all in effort to try to support our partners in a more meaningful way and look for those ways to help improve their business and the way that they do things. So,
yeah. I know you and I were texting a few weeks ago. No, it was more than that, actually. We're recording this in April 2024. You took on the role at SuperOps, I think it was it November or December of last year, was it?
Technically October, officially. October. Announced it a little bit late just because we were kind of going through our funding round. So I waited a little while just to let the company get a lot of the notoriety there. But yeah, it's been a little bit.
Yeah.
It been here for a while though. I'll tell you.
I was going to say I've lost track of the time now. I know you and I were texting when the announcement was coming up after I'd spoken to the team and everything. I also know that role you were telling me came about in unusual circumstances. So can you share that story with our listeners if you'd be open to it?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, when I think about, and I had exited my MSP and I know we'll cover a little bit about that. And I was investing in SaaS platforms and doing different things. And you know, I was always intentive to try to solve the problem. You know, one of the challenges of giving advice is that I recognized that I was able to give bandages and issue prescriptions for pain, but I couldn't solve it. And me as a developer and as an engineer and kind of going back to root cause analysis, I'm like, I have to fix the problem. And so my intent was to build an ITSM or ITOM product, which is an RMM PSA. And that was kind of my thesis of what I was going to do next was build that. But I felt like I was a little bit late in terms of how long it was going to take me to build it. And so I was looking and I actually went, you know, I was looking at different products and I actually stumbled across SuperOps. And you know, had a chance to meet with the team and ask a lot of questions at one of their meetings. And, you know, we just really hit it off. And I asked a lot of questions and they were like, what is this guy? Why is he asking? Like, how does he know? Like, and I'm like, you're going to put that there, aren't you? And they're like, we actually weren't going to talk about that, but yes, actually. And I uncovered many of the things that I thought they would do with their platform and some of the ways that technology was innovating and some of the things I was like, in this white space right here, you're going to add this, aren't you? And they're like, yes, actually we are. So it's really weird. And me and Arvin hit it off where, you know, the CEO Arvin and Jay, which is the co-founder, you know, and I got to meet the head of product and I talked to them all and we just really, really hit it off. And I said, if you guys are going to build this way, I want to help you do this because this is something that's a passion of mine and I really want to help the MSP industry. And I would come back in to play this game if you guys promised me that this is what we would build. And they vouched and that's what I did. And that's why I came and put my name on this. So it's been an amazing story in the very short period of time with so many amazing customers coming in, such awesome outcomes in this very short period. And it's just really awesome to be able to help MSPs grow their businesses and see them come to me later. People that don't even know me are like, dude, what you're doing is literally changing my life and my business. And I mean, that's just so honoring to be a part of that.
I love it. You and I were having the conversation. I've had this same conversation with Arvin when we first started doing a bit of work together, and also with Nancy, who we'll talk about in a minute. But I was saying, I am so proud to see what's happening at SuperOps because I'm a great believer in this industry needs to keep innovating, keeps the changing. And, you know, we're a big supporter at Tublog, shining a light on the positive disruptors in the industry. And you are right up near the top of that list, you know, doing things differently because you and I have been doing this for a while. And
yeah.
There's you know, legacy tools in the market and that, and it's absolutely no knock on anybody, but we need things to change and we need things to change for the better. And that's what I believe SuperOps is doing right now, isn't it?
Yeah, we're really focused a lot on that, right? And I think I call it the journey to change, right? And that's the beauty of doing something differently. A lot of the times, you know, we recognize we started our business and I come from this, right? As an accidental entrepreneur, like I know what a construction glove feels like. And now I know what a surgical glove feels like. One of them gets the job done, but God, man, I get a lot of calluses from that. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you what a surgical glove feels like. And it is so much more precise and so much more elegant in the way you actually use it and the way you operate with it. It's just such a different feeling. And that's where I think, you know, I saw that was a need because I built an empire on top of, you know, a stack that I didn't always fit me. And I knew that that was something that we could fix. And technology's here and I'm just really honored to be a part of it. And I don't know where to even start, but the future is super bright and I can promise you it will be very different than where we are today.
Yeah, I have no doubt of that. Let's jump in a little bit into your background. Let's give the listeners some background. So obviously you're somebody I've admired for quite some time. You're very well known in North America in the managed service provider scene. We've got a global audience here today. So there's going to be some people who have not come across your work, don't know a lot about you. So share, you've alluded to it a little bit, but let's share your journey prior to SuperOps. And perhaps let's start with the MSP.
Yeah, so I come from a place, like many others, right? I was back in the early 90s. I don't know how many people remember a company called AOL, but I was part of that foray into the internet, right? And the development of tech. And so, you know, for many, just like everyone else, like I went through a certification path, rose through the engineering ranks, got into mid-level management and built businesses. And as I reached levels that I didn't ever think I really could in my younger years, you know, I eventually at some point, as I was heading up cybersecurity at the federal government for a branch of the government, I exited and I left to go start a break fix managed services back in those days, you know, early 2000s, IT company. And I took that to about 3 million and then was selling that off to another larger entity, became, you know, the CEO of that for a little while. And then that's a whole nother story, but it wasn't the best exit. And I went back in the industry for a little while and built a couple more enterprises. And then I decided, you know, as I watched technology kind of turn, I waited till it was exciting again. And back in 2014, I drafted out what I thought would be the next era of IT services. And I created like an as a service methodology and created a conference around it. And I decided to start an MSP in the end of 2015, or at the beginning of 2015. So January 1st, 2015, I started an IT company, an MSP, went to market with an as a service methodology back when as a service wasn't really a thing, and launched a managed services practice in Durango, Colorado. And there's not very many there's 7,000 people in that whole geo. So like, it wasn't like, I was kind of on this retirement train, if you will. But I started it there, and I proved my theorem in terms of how to grow and scale and find the right customer types, and created in this small little town a nucleus that I could replicate. And I landed up growing that 0 to 20 million in 6 years and 16 locations across the United States. So it was an interesting ride, right? But it was always interesting to see that the bar table napkin that I originally wrote the design on was the same thing that I landed up with, was just small iterations around what we actually had intended on doing. So it was really wild to watch, but man, it created a lot of process and procedure. It created a lot of operational excellence. And I shared that along my journey with everybody, because I was stumbling around the managed services space, seeing if there was people that were doing this, and nobody was. And they were like, yeah, I don't know what guy's even talking about. So I was like, and nobody wanted to share. So I was like, what is wrong with everybody? Why does no one want to share? Why won't anyone talk about what they're doing? It was very tight knit. So I said, you know what? I'm going to break down this barrier, and I'm going to start telling everybody what I'm doing and illustrating it to them so that maybe they'll share back. And that's kind of how I started. And it's just kind of blossomed from there, and had a very happy exit on my way out. My team is still performing well at that MSP, and they're still all there except for me and my team that exited. So it's just, it's been wonderful. And to be able to share that methodology and also help other MSPs with that has been fun.
It's such an incredible story that you've got. And, the figures and the growth that you talk about is something that most people only aspire to. And, you've achieved it. Oh. So people often ask me, why did I sell my MSP business? I'm going back 13 years there. And I say, I don't tell them the full story, but not because I'm hiding it, but I say it was a life event, combination of life events, and because I wanted to do more of what I'm doing now. Can I put you on the spot? Can I ask, what prompted you to exit that business and to seek out these new adventures?
Yeah, I think, so I started off with a plan, right? I had a 4-year plan, and I stayed 2 years too long. And the reason for that was, when I started, I knew exactly what I was going to do within that period of time. I built that. Again, I talk about the bar table napkin. That was legit. But I based that off of a lot of research on how buyers buy, the temperament of the modern buyer. I based it on the modern buying patterns. I based it on the way technology companies buy, like the ICP, like the customer type and segments, the way they buy, security compliance, all these things, right? And I said, if I just put it together and I support it in a meaningful way, I can do this. And I actually projected 4 years, and I stayed 2 years because the pandemic hit. Yeah. So my intent was not to stay past that. But when we got to that inflection point, it was such a rocky road that I hadn't forecasted a pandemic. I didn't know what this was. So they asked, hey, can you stick around? I said, yeah, I'll stick around. And we really rode that through. And I wanted to make sure that my team was sufficient. And as I got more and more into the operational pieces, the only place for them to go was up, right? So in order, and I used to say this all the time, if I'm not the right leader, I'll fire myself, right? And I used to measure that all the time. But one of the things that I'm also concerned about is that when a business gets to a certain stage, that leader is not the right leader anymore, right? In order for you, that same thinking that got you there is not always maybe the same thinking that'll get you to the next stage. And so, if I believe in my team and I empower them, and I say this all the time, there's this thing called people, process, technology that everybody hears. And I say, I think that's broken, because I create process that empower people to be successful, which create great cultures, which create great companies. That's my definition of leadership. But we hear people process technology, like if you hire the people, they'll figure it out and then they'll create the process and then it'll work. And I'm like, no. That's why I started small and created a process that I could educate people on. And I didn't care who I put in those seats because I could train them into that arena. So for me, it was like, I've trained everyone for success. Like, I mean, some of my branches, like there was four people running, doing $4 million a year, right? So when you think about that, it was the process that was the thing that empowered them. And they had to just run the process and it just needed to work. And that's where a lot of my methodologies come from, you know, connotations like I use, like quarter in, dollar out, like, you know, watching the quarter come through and watching it turn into a dollar. Those types of things. And when I got to that level, I said, you know what, the only thing left here to do is to allow them to now know that I've empowered them to be successful. And that's where I felt like it was an appropriate time to exit. So it was really weird to watch it all play out and actually almost do it by the numbers. It was actually kind of eerie, and but it was honoring, and it, you know, it just plays itself well over and over and over again, because I've been able to do that and help MSPs, like, hey, here it is. I put it in, you know, several books and also in texts and all these other things that I share all the time, because I want people to be successful. And if you just figure out your methodology, you can too, and then figure out what your exit point is.
Yeah, I think your journey is actually unusual in the managed service space.
Sure.
You know, I mentioned my own journey. I was an engineer, techie geek. And then you get good at doing that. And then before you know it, you've got a business. And then before you know it, you sell the business and you move on to the next thing. I actually think having a plan and executing on it and then stepping out the other side and moving on to something else is really quite unusual. Crazy though that sounds. So I'm in awe of what you've achieved there, because I never had a plan, and I was just lucky to fall out the other side and, you know, pick up doing what we're doing at the moment. So, you know, thank you for sharing.
I will say though, my first business didn't have a plan, and I would say all my lessons that I learned from my first one were basically guardrails to say, I don't want to do this again. Like the reason that I mean, everything that I did was an output from the last one. Like I was like, I took everything that I learned in that first one and I put it into the second one just to see if I could do it again, but faster, quicker, better. That was all that really was just to see, was I right? And could it have been bigger, right? That's all it was just one of those things for me to just engineer the win,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah, I think it is uncommon, but, you know, even my original team, I remember I had proposed it to them. So I was running this technology conference and everyone said, you can't do a conference in the middle of nowhere, man. No one will come. We grew that thing to epic proportions. And I remember that's where I found some of the best was at that event. And I said, hey, if I built this Walmart of IT and everyone could just buy products and services off the shelf for a price they could afford, what do you think? And they said, if you do it, we'll come. Mm-hmm. I said, how much would that cost? And they were like, hey, if I get to this number, I would be there. And I said, all right. So I called them November 11th, 2014. And I said, hey, January 1st, put in your 30 days. I'm paying you what you want and we're starting. And you know how many of the five people that said that actually came?
Go on.
Two of them. And those two of them rode with me all the way through. And they were like, dude, I would have never, ever, ever thought that you were this serious and that it would work.
Yeah.
When we heard it, we knew we wanted a part of it. And the other three, they were fresh. They wanted to come in later. And I said, no, man, the train has left.
Yeah.
So wow. It was really fun to watch and to be able to dial that in. And again, it's just, I say this all the time, right? Two things can happen in life. You can hope for the best or you can plan. And one of them is called a hope business plan. And the other one's called a business plan, right? Yes. Oftentimes as entrepreneurs and accidental entrepreneurs, similar to where we started, Richard, we don't know. And so this is where my journey to continue to educate the MSP pressed on, is to help them come up with the plan for success so that they could see it too.
Mm. Well, given your experience in the industry and the fact, I think personally, you could have pretty much chosen any role you wanted in our space. You must have been pretty excited by what SuperOps are doing to join them in such a high profile role. So let me ask you, you've mentioned, you know, you hit it off with SuperOps CEO and co-founder Arvind Parthiban before. In your experience, how does Arvind's attitude differ to other CEOs in our industry?
We were both aligned in terms of what we want to do. You know, Arvind's primary thesis in terms, he's had successful exits. He's built, you know, Zoho and Freshdesk, and or say the combined leadership has built Zoho and Freshdesk, and, you know, built another company, and they exited for $300 million. And it wasn't about the money. That's the challenge with some of the things when we're thinking about empowering others, is that it's oftentimes leveraged by a coin. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't looking, even with what I wanted to do, I've never been leveraged by a coin. I don't want the money to encourage me to make a decision. What I want to do is the right thing. And Arvind's whole thesis was to create jobs for the community and to be able to create legacy wealth for all of our employees. And that aligns with what I want in life, is to help empower others. I talk about this, you know, I used to wear the badge called CEO, and on the bottom of it, it was Chief Encouragement Officer, you know, and when I think about that as a leader, our job is not to tell people what to do, is to empower them to be more successful and to create those jobs and those opportunities for people to find success. That's the moment that I love the most. And Arvind is the same way. And so when we met on that plane, I knew right then and there, I was like, as long as he's serious and we have everything else is lined up, this will be a force that can't be stopped. And because we're doing it for the right reason, because we're trying to empower others to be successful, because we're really focused on our partner's success, and all that bleeds through, and you can tell in the way the product supports itself, the way the people are around it, like you can see it. Yeah. And that to me is what builds an amazing company. And I kudos to Arvind for having that vision and really wanting to make that difference. It stems from his father as well, which is an honorable story of where his father actually helped create jobs in India. So that legacy has passed on, and I have picked up that torch as well to help carry that forward to create jobs and also help others. So it just was a good alignment.
I really hit it off with Arvind when first met, much like yourself. I would consider Arvind to be, you know, what I would call a promoter. He lifts people up. He promotes people to be the best version of themselves. I see that in you as well, from, you know, where you've been. And if we're talking about promoting, we've got to talk about the team that you've built around you, certainly for the US side of things. So a few weeks ago on Tub Talk episode 147, we spoke with your colleague and friend, Nancy Enriquez, and it was for International Women's Day. Let's just talk about the team you've pulled together. You must be really proud of what Nancy's achieving, but talk to me about what you look for in the team that you've pulled together around you.
You know, I mentioned it a minute ago. I don't really think it's about... what I look for is those people with drive. I look for determination. I look for passion. And oftentimes, you know, interestingly enough, as a leader, it's... when you're looking for those things, we often look for those that can do the job. I actually look for people that are passionate about something, and then I want to align them around the thing. In the case of Nancy, in the case of most of my team, they're passionate about something, but what they were passionate about, there may have been in a job that wasn't self-fulfilling. And when you give somebody their passion and the opportunity, as I call to create the dream job, and I've done this in my last org, that's unstoppable. And I love watching that happen in people, where they see that self-recognition of I can. I see the self-recognition of their ability to enact change and take on their future destiny as their own and really champion their cause with full support. And this is one of the things that we have right now with our team, is that I've given them all their passion. And Nancy, for instance, she was an MSP. She was at MSP. She had sold her MSP. And I saw when she was doing her podcast that her passion was there. And I called her. I was like, why did you stop doing that? She's like, well, it really didn't align with the business momentum and forward. I said, why don't you come work for me? And I want you to do just that. And she's like, I'll be right there. and then that was like, if you look, like you can see it pouring out of her and everything she does, and that embracing of the community and giving her that opportunity. It's the same for my other team, right? Like all my other teammates, you know, Johnson and Ryan, like they're super passionate about helping MSPs. And if you just align people with their passion, and it sounds foolish, no. It sounds hard to do, but you know, you have to be able to spot that. And that's where I focus most of my attention is really looking at it. And I love taking people that have never done something before and allowing them to accomplish great and amazing feats. And a lot of our team doesn't come from the MSP space. They're learning this and they're learning together with the MSPs because this is new, this is different. And so I can't even tell you, I posted the other day and, you know, I know they're pushing themselves to learn and I can see their trials. I see their tribulations. I see all their challenges. Even though they're pushing themselves outside their comfort zones, we even have a hashtag outside of your comfort zone. Hey team, I wore a pink shirt, right? Like for the first time, like I don't do these things. I challenge myself and they challenge me. And so it's kind of fun to do. And with that, it's the smiles that I look for at the end, because even if it's not 100% success, it's the fact that we did something together and we did something new and we made a difference. And for me, I love that moment. Like that's what I live for amongst everything else. Like we could, you know, make a mint or we could make nothing. But what I'm looking for is their mental strength and what they're looking to do next. And that's where I'm excited. So yeah, the team is fascinating. If you're around us for any period of time, it's infectious, as people have mentioned to me. And so during our super summits, people are like, dude, this feels like family here. And I'm like, as it should, because that's what we are. So
yeah, you are building something special as a company there. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to be friends with Nancy. We exchange texts and she is having a blast. As anybody who listened to our Tub Talk 147 a few weeks ago, she's really in the flow at the moment. So proud. Let me ask, and this is not from a negative perspective, but I said you're a promoter. You've clearly, as Arvind, as I hopefully consider myself to be, and many other MSPs who listen to this, they look as though they can see the potential of people. At what point in your career have you ever had experiences where somebody you've seen the potential in and they're just not achieving that potential? At what point do you draw the line and say, actually, we've tried this, but it's not working the way I would perceive it could have?
Yeah, I think that I give everybody the opportunity to self-select, right? The challenge with change is the opportunity and the mindset, right? You know, people change in a number of various different ways, right? When they're empowered enough, they can. When they've been educated to a point that they feel they have enough information or they have enough pain or pressure to make the decision. And in that case, I allow everybody those opportunities to change, right? I see it in you and I know you can do it. The challenge is that they have no desire, right? And that's always a frustrating point as a leader. Yeah. Like, I know where you could go. And they're like, but I'm okay right where I'm at. And that's the fear of change, right? Or there's something that's holding them back. And it's unfortunate because I have seen it in the past and it's very unfortunate. But to that point, you know, they talk about this all the time in leadership, is that you have to make decisions really quickly. Like if you see that as a trend line, you can't stifle everyone else because that actually toxifies the bunch, right? It only takes one to spoil the bunch. And that's true as much as they touch each other. So you have to act quickly at that. Like you have to make sure that you have everybody pulling in the same direction. They're all working toward a similar goal. Like everybody has to be in alignment. And, you know, it's okay to have contrarians and it's okay to challenge. And that's really a great aspect of leadership, is if you have people that are able to do those things. But when I see that you're not driving and that you're actually starting to pull people down, that's where I have to actually step in. And we have a conversation and we talk about those things. And I try to understand, like, what's really what's there? Because there's a lot of psychology and leadership. Like, and oftentimes we miss it as techs. It's like, look, I just need you to turn the wrench and get it done. Like, I need you to put the tickets in. I need you to do those things. There's a lot of stuff that sometimes is unfulfilling in our lives, right? And so we have to give them those growth paths and like upward trajectories. And I call it an employee success program. You have to be thinking about how does this equal my employee success? And what is it, even though it's a short-term opportunity or even long-term, how does this like, what is this, what is the upward mobility here? So yeah, it's tough. It's tough as a leader to make decisions like that. But just like anything else, I mean, if you never trim a plant, it just gets to be a mess, right? So if you want it to be beautiful and you want it to be something that's beholden, you have to trim the plant. And, you know, that's often tough. And that's the same in business. You know, if you want it to be amazing, sometimes you got to make, you know, a few trimmings and you got to shape things in the way that you need to go in order to be that vision that you have.
How do you bolster your resilience as a human being? You're a good human being, one. You know, we know this. You're very well thought of in the industry. But as you say, as a leader, sometimes you've got to make tough decisions with people, letting people go, cutting back, whatever it might be. How do you build that resilience?
I think that this is a thing, right? So like when you set appropriate, now, if I just tell you to do something and you don't do it, that's something, right? Like that, I could say you just chose not to do it. But when I create a process that's illustrated success and I lead by example, right? So I always tell my team, I won't ask you to do something that I wouldn't.
Sure.
Right. So I go and do things first, even if it's the smallest thing, like, you know, whatever it is, I will do it and then say, does that make sense? And if I've showed you how to do it and showed you that it's possible, the only thing you have to do now is believe that you can. Right. And if you just are the one that's holding yourself back, then you self-select. Right. You're just the one that's saying, I can't. It's not that it's not possible. So I've taken the impossibility out of the equation. It is possible. It's just whether or not you believe it is. And that's where I have to help them understand that, like, you know, maybe this isn't the right role for you, because in this case, you know, and again, the team also is empowered to a point where they have onus over process and procedure and the way that they deliver. So if you don't do that and make them owners of it and you're the owner of everything, then you're going to find yourself in this lens of me versus them, right? And if you empower the team, then it's the team makes the select the choice, right? They actually will feed you information and say, this person isn't working.
Right.
And the team makes the decision, and then I have to give them all the inputs, and then they either have an opportunity to change, or the alternative is that this probably isn't a good fit, because here's all the things, and they can see it, right? Like, it's not like their world around them changes, right? Instead of I changing their world by having a conversation. So that's how I operate. You know, I think as a leader, there's a number of different ways to do it. If you like the command and control scenario, you know, I personally like the team vote, like where there's the individual contributors and everybody's an owner of those processes. That works better for me because I don't land up with the problem and I have an equation. If the problem equals one, one is the problem. So I get all the problems into processes and then give them to somebody so that I don't have the problem anymore.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where you have to be thinking about the type of business that you want, right? And oftentimes we feel like as leaders, we are supposed to make those decisions. That's not true. You can actually have your team make the decision by empowering them to make it. And that in turn then either moves people into the right role or into the position you want them to have, or it moves them out of the organization. And generally they'll self-select if that's the case. So it's just an interesting way to approach it. I choose that path because it's a lot less friction and a lot more cohesion. And it gives the autonomy to allow people to find other roles that may be more suitable for them, which I think oftentimes is a big thing. It's like, yes, I love this person, but maybe that role that I have them in isn't the right one for them.
Right.
And we have to recognize that sometimes we ask people to do something and what we're asking them to do because we can do it doesn't mean they can.
Sure.
Oftentimes, you know, we hire people that we don't realize are operators, not creators. So even though you say, hey, well, just come up with a a way to do that. And they're like, can you just tell me what to do? And I'm like, then they're like, no, just figure it out is often what you hear. And it's like, you see this, the scared look on their face, like, oh, okay, I guess I'll try. And then we land up with something we didn't want. This is the challenge, right? Is I've asked you now as an operator to be a creator. And the right hemispheres of the brain don't function that way all the time. So sometimes we create the problem by not recognizing. That's why I say I create processes, because I can, and I can teach you how to do it. And then they'll operate the program. I said, but if I ask you to create the program, that's where the people process technology comes in. If I don't shift those, I have a higher attrition rate than if I do shift those. So I think there's a couple of different nuances there, and we could probably dive into more deep parts of that. But
that's fascinating to me. And what I'm hearing a little bit is, you know, sometimes we bring people in and we thought they were capable of one role, but really they're not. But perhaps it's about meeting people where they are rather than where we want them to be in some cases. So how do you balance that against looking at, because you see the potential in people. Sure. I've seen this, you know, lots of times. When you can see the potential in somebody and perhaps you've misjudged, you know, they're an operator, not a creator. How do you go about dealing with that situation?
Yeah, I really look for it. And it's just one of those things where you have to put the quarter in, right? So I talk about a quarter in, dollar out methodology. I use new employees to drop in and say, okay, hey, do me a favor. I want you to follow this chain and then tell me where it's broken. And it's oftentimes, it's interesting to see where they put themselves. Mm. And they're like, hey, I really like this area right here. Like customer success is like, I jive here. Or I find them that where the quarter stops is, I really love community. Or, hey, I really love tickets. Or, hey, I really love, you know, these things. Like, it's interesting to see where they drop themselves, which is always interesting. So when I put them through that process of following a customer journey, and again, I'll illustrate some of that, like this guy here, you know, it's oftentimes, again, what your process is, can you follow this clearly and tell me where the problem is? And it's fun to watch where they land up. And they're like, hey, this area needs help. And I really, really like this area. And I'm like, interesting. I kind of thought you'd stop right there. Right. And it's just allowing them that opportunity. And I think that you have to create that process for your employees to be successful. And if you don't have one, it'll always seem like this magic serum that happens and you're not quite sure how. Like, you have to think through what you're doing and what you're delivering in order to be able to place people on those appropriate roles and allow them to self-select into them. So I make it sound easy, but I also have a methodology of how I build it so that it actually, they can find themselves in an area that they can be successful. Otherwise, it's just this wild sprawling thing, right? So that's where I think you have to, you know, you find out where they attach themselves to the most and then allow them to embrace that.
That's absolutely fascinating to me. Has been somebody who's sort of built and sold businesses and looking back at like, man, I wish I'd have known that earlier in my career. I know. Could have been...
Rich, we talk about this, what you wish you knew, man. And I'm telling you, like, this is why I tell everybody about how, because I wish I would have known that. Like, if I would have been I shouldn't have been a multimillionaire in my 20s. I can tell you that right now.
But it wouldn't have been healthy.
I am glad that after, I figured it out, but this is why I want to share it, because so many people need to know that there is a different way of doing it, that there is an actual way that is not as painful as what we endured.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the drivers for me on a small level. When I sold the MSP business, it was like, I really get a kick out of helping other people, other MSP owners, to avoid the mistakes that I make or made, I should say. And I've got to say, I make this joke, but it's so much in truth. Like, there's an infinite source of content for me to talk about there, because I made a lot of mistakes one when I was doing it, as you probably did as well. So,
oh yeah, a lot of the mistakes, you know, I will say, as I think back to them, the beauties of them are, you know, just Everything that I've done and all the dark roads, like I say all the time, if you guys want to know all the ways to screw up, come see me after. And I'm happy to talk you through all the things. And here's a scenario where you, if you do that, this is X, Y axis of catastrophe, right? Like I can tell you how to burn a business down. And I can tell you how to build a successful business. So I've seen both ends of the stick. So in between that is where I hope everybody lands, is like that nice soft green grass.
Yeah. For certain. Let's change tact a little bit. We talked about processes, but by the time this episode goes out, in a week's time, in fact, you and I will have spent time together at this Super Ops Super Summit London. Yeah. This is the, I think it's the third such event that Super Ops have run on this side of the pond. I know you mentioned yourself, Nancy, the team run Super Summit events in North America as well. What does Super Ops International strategy look like? Can you give us a glimpse into where we might see Super Ops in sort of 12 months time?
Yeah, you know, we have a lot of opportunities coming up where we're actually expanding into this arena and being able to bring this thought leadership over and really exposing everybody to the opportunities that we've created here in the U.S. You know, Super Summits as a whole, I would say, are all about education. Right. That's the big thing for us, is helping MSPs find in. It's a huge passion of mine. The Super Summits that we built here in the US, that same ethos is now coming over, and you're going to be joining us. So we're going to be talking about wonderful stuff like how to grow your business and all the processes and the procedures and tacts and all the things that you can be doing to grow your business without any sales pitches. And that's really a big thing. I don't know that I detest them. I think they have their place, but I will say when I'm trying to learn, I'd really like to learn. And that's one of the things that we're really excited about, is to be able to bring that learning. And, you know, since that's a big piece for me, and I actually will be there as well, teaching a lot of the quarter in dollar out methodologies that I have and sharing a lot of that. Everybody here has come together for a reason, and that's to help MSPs grow their business. And that's where I think community is rallying around it. So we plan on doing a lot more in the UK and also in all of the rest of the world as well to help MSPs, because it's not just in the US. All over the world, there are business owners that are trying to figure it out, and we just hope that we can help them on that journey.
Yeah. I know one of your passions lies in moving the channel forwards. This much is probably clear to anybody who's listening. You've contributed to writing the CompTIA A+, the Network Plus, the Security Plus tests. You also serve on the CompTIA Subject Matter Expert Technology Advisory Board. So clearly you're a supporter of CompTIA, as I am. Talk about it a lot on this show. But what does CompTIA mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the managed service industry?
I will say this first and foremost, CompTIA has probably one of the biggest places in my heart. I am CompTIA. And I think about this back in the day, because I'm not traditionally trained in education. I didn't go to college to get a degree. I actually jumped straight into tech and got certifications and went and became a cert person. But, you know, I remember when I took my first A+, I actually failed it. And everyone had told me, you're not smart enough to get into tech. You're not, you know, you shouldn't go into computers. Like, you know, we should just stay doing the physical labor stuff that we know how to do as a culture and as a community. And our family wasn't very educated. Not many of them have ever graduated from college. I wasn't willing to accept that. And so my wife at the time, actually my girlfriend, which is now my wife, she encouraged me to push myself to do it again. And that's where I unlocked the first I can moment. And it just built a whole fire underneath me that I could potentially be something that maybe everyone thought I couldn't be, and even myself at the time. And it propelled me to so high of a level that I've stayed involved with CompTIA my entire life and have taken the classes. And I remember right before I started my MSP in 2014, I got called, and I had just taken my A+ again. And they called me and they're like, hey, like, why'd you take your A+ again? And what is the deal? You're a CIO of a college. Like, what? You've had a grand, you know, how you have it 7 times. What's the story here? And I'm like, I take it because I'm challenging my teams at every org that I work at to also find their moment. And that's where I got invited to help come write the A Plus and wrote it for many, many years. And, you know, it was really honoring to know that I dropped the phone when they asked me to come help write it. I was like, the test that I once failed and thought I couldn't do, I now will write. And it was just, that'll be the moment for the rest of my life that I remember where I couldn't. And all of a sudden now I can, but I actually will create and help design the thing that I once thought was never even possible for me as a dream. And so I have focused a lot of my attention on making sure that the A Plus program and the Security Plus and all the CompTIA certifications are things that are relative to the industry and that they're moving forward and that they're very validated in terms of where technology's at. So I'm a big supporter of that. I think anybody that's out there has to be thinking about the employee success program. And if you're not empowering your people to be successful through certification and education, your product will suffer. So a lot of my team, I would focus there on making sure that they got certified every year. And that was, it was a new question. It was a mandatory fact. You will get certified. Why? Because in order for me to deliver high quality customer service and the smallest amount of time of resolution is I needed you to be very educated on the things that we were doing. And so that's how we built a very, very well built MSP program was around those ethoses of best practices. I don't want to have people looking for the four right answers based on an internet search. That's too much time cost. Time is money for managed services. And the quicker time to resolution is, the more profitable I become and the happier my employees are when they can solve the problem. So by them not putting time and effort into their education, I say this, the best investment you'll ever make is the one you make in yourself. You have to be that employer that allows them to make that journey and that jump toward investing in themselves. And it's only a benefit for everybody that does it. So again, raising the tide across the board, I the books that I write go into contributing back to give certifications back to the industry as well. So, you know, for those that are struggling, they can go to the website and grab one of the books and apply for the giveaway. And if they need certification, they can get it because I know how hard it is. I remember being there, not able to afford it. And that almost held me back from who I am today. And I just cannot express how much that CompTIA actually means to me and what it did for my life and my family and so many other families that will follow behind. And I just cannot say enough about it. And so I hope that everybody hears me on this and will impress upon their people to learn and go and get certifications.
Yeah, I've got to share about CompTIA as well. You know, they've been a big part of my life, you know, throughout, but especially after I sold the MSP business, I wasn't really sure I'd got it in me to do what I'm doing now. I've got, you know, I'll share that. People think, oh yeah, yeah, he just knew what he was doing. No. And CompTIA just started their first managed service community, and it was the UK, what's now known as the UK and Ireland community. And they suggested, oh, you should run for chairman. I was like, oh, not sure. And I'm getting choked up saying it, but I was voted in by my peers, you know, in a landslide. There was no other, everybody, in fact, the other candidates sort of stepped aside and said, no, you know, Richard, such a confidence boost for me. To the validation of my peers to say, yeah, we want you to lead this forward. And when I go into a room now and, you know, the CompTIA community, and there's hundreds of people in the room there, and 3/4 of them that don't know who I am, it's great. And that's a good thing because it's wonderful. You know, that community started out with 20 of us in a room in Birmingham in the UK, and now it's absolutely flourishing. And so, like you, CompTIA has got a big part of my heart there. So just wanted to share that out. I want to pick up, you said about your books, we've mentioned, you know, we've alluded to this a couple of times. So you were one of the folks behind the book, the MSP Owner's Handbook, which is a guide to empowering small businesses and personnel with the strategies that you've talked about to build a successful business and careers. Tell us more about that book specifically, and then perhaps mention, you know, some of the other work that you're doing out there.
Yeah, we have, I met after I'd won a thing called MSP Shark Tank. it was kind of one of these things where a good friend of mine now, Marnie Stockman, got a hold of me on LinkedIn. And, you know, anybody that connects to me on LinkedIn, I make an effort to say hello to and understand their story and maybe try to be of value to them and help them in some meaningful way. And, you know, we just hit it off, me and Marnie. And she comes from education and she was building a SaaS company called Lifecycle Insights. And, you know, I was, you know, investing in SaaS companies. So I was interested to understand their journey and some of their challenges. And, you know, as we started talking, we really clicked on this customer success meets customer experience talk track. And I said, you know what, like, we really seem like we really synergize on like the things that we're speaking about. And from an educator perspective, we just really melded and it felt synergetic. And whenever I find those scenarios similar, like the relationship we have, Richard, I embrace those and want to integrate and become more of a, you know, a voice together than an individual contributor. So we decided to go on stage and we knew we hit it off. Like, we met each other for the first time live on stage 5 minutes before physically, and we just crushed this presentation. And I came out after, I said, how do you feel about writing a book? And she goes, I'm okay with it. And so I said, why don't we write a book together? And I'm thinking about writing a book about QBRs in terms of how, because I'm getting, everyone's asking me how I grew and scaled so fast. And I really need to explain this. You happen to actually own a QBR business. I said, I think it'd be really interesting to synergize around these methodologies and tie in customer success. And so the output from that was was the MSP Owner's Handbook QBR edition. And then we subsequently wrote the MSP Owner's Handbook Sassy edition with like Matt Lee and Wes Spencer. Yeah. And so we decided to create workbooks and read-alongs and ways for MSPs, because I kept getting asked and I was like, there's no way I could tell everybody how to do this. So if I write a book, then they can do it. And ironically, that book took off. And it to this day is now used as like education material for SaaS companies on how to approach MSPs and understand their mindsets and crazy things. I mean, it's been translated into Portuguese now and all these different things. And I'm like, what is going on, man? We just wrote a book to help a few people and give away some money for certifications. And now all of a sudden it's turned into like this whole thing. So it's really an honor to be able to contribute. And those books, we committed to writing six of them. So we'll have our next book out very soon, which will be the sales edition. So we're really looking forward to that. And again, it's all the strategies and tactics and designs on how to build an effective, scalable business through a couple different lenses. And it's really, really good. And we've got a lot of great feedback. Again, I don't know, not a lot of people have told me anything's been horrible. So I am always open to that. We got a lot of good star ratings. So it sounds like we have a few fans, but it's just been wonderful to be able to give back. And that's the whole thesis of the books are live, learn, give. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, I know a lot of our listeners listen to the show while they're driving or commuting or out walking the dog. I hear this from people. I get lovely selfies from people saying, hey, I got one the other day from somebody. I'm out running with my husband and I'm looking. I got a picture of it showing me on the iPhone while they were out running.
Yeah.
The reason I bring that up is if you are in the car or out or running or whatever, please don't worry about making notes on all of the great resources that Juan has mentioned here, because we'll include them in the show notes for this episode at Tublog, the hub for MSPs. Juan, you're a mentor to many people. We've mentioned a few of them in this call, but who do you consider a mentor or an inspiration?
You know, I will say this, and I've said this for a long time. I don't actually look up to anybody. One of the reasons I don't do that is because I actually put a ceiling on things. What I do, and this is how I built my entire life, is I learn. And I remember even when I was young and I remember seeing behaviors that I didn't like, I said, I will make sure that one day I never as a leader do that. And I built a whole repository inside of me of things to never do as a leader so that I don't look to people to say, hey, I want to be like that. I always look to say, I don't want to be like this. And I've allowed myself to kind of grow up into the thing that I want. So I've stabilized my foundation on all the things that I don't want. And I still do that today, right? I see things and I'm like, okay, we're not doing that. And it really helps me focus my leadership skills to say, are these any of the things that I have learned or saw or seen as tactics that I don't want to do? And it just allows me an upward mobility to really push myself to be something that I don't want to be, right? And it's just, I look for a lot of those nuances where I think a lot of other people might look at different things. So for me, that's my approach to it. So I don't necessarily have anybody I look up to, other than the good Lord above, but that being the thing where I just base everything off of what I don't want to do and then make those landmark points so that it keeps me straight and narrow down the path.
That's really interesting to me. Something I stumbled across a long time ago. It's easy, isn't it, to look for the things that, oh, I wish I was doing this and I want to be able to do that. In productivity terms, we all have task lists and things. Sure. A number of years ago, I put together a not-to-do list, and it was very similar to what you're talking about, and it's the traits, and I had it printed and said, don't be doing this. And some of them were productivity-based, like, don't look at your phone in the morning, don't read emails first thing, and it really helped me, but also plenty of them were personality traits. Don't be like this. Don't be that guy. And so I'm fascinated by what you've shared there, because that's the first time I've ever heard of somebody saying, yeah, I put it out there, what I don't want to be, and that helps me strive forward. So really interesting. You've obviously got tons of knowledge of the industry. That much is apparent. And in technology in general as well. Do you have any tips for our listeners, one, on sources of knowledge they should be aware of? How do you keep your, you know, mental faculties and knowledge of the industry sharp?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing for me is just paying attention where the puck is going, right? I do a lot of industry research. I do a lot of paying attention to what is happening, the way buyers buy, the buyer behavior. I pay attention to industry trends. I say pay attention to, you know, the way customers are focusing their dollars and the ways that what the conversations that they're having. All of those things, you know, by speaking and joining into groups that I'm interested in doing business with, like, I absorb more than I actually exude, right? And from that, I, as a leader, I continuously learn, because that's the way that I find is the most advantageous to stay current. I just stay immersed in it. And so for anybody that's out there, I would say just stay involved, like dig in deep. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the further you get away from the problem, the less you know about it. And so how can you solve a problem if you don't have any idea what it is? And that's where I think the modern MSP needs to be thinking about modern problems and modern value equations. You have to understand what buyers want, and you have to understand the way they want it. You have to understand the technology that they're interested in using, and you have to really be in that problem and be talking to them about it so that you can actually position your products for the future and your support. So That's my suggestion.
Yeah, absolutely. We are coming to the end of our time together. You're a busy man. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to speak with me. And I've got to say, I'm so looking forward to hanging out with you a little bit next week when you come to London. apart from your trip to London, what's in the immediate future for yourself and for SuperOps?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, we're continuing to build our community. And for those that want to join, I'm happy to have you, you know, definitely connect with me on LinkedIn and follow along. You know, one of the great things, and I say, you know, all the time to everybody, everything that you do, everybody's watching. Just give them something to watch and make it meaningful. And that being said, you know, for us, that's what we're focused on, is making it meaningful, making it something for our partners and also for the MSP community to find success with. So that's where we're focused. I am doing a number of shows back to back to back, Canada, Nashville, London. So happy to share if I can meet you, any of you guys out there in the field. And I can't wait to see you guys in London. I'm happy to sit down and understand your journey and issues and see if there's ways that I can bring value. And that's really what we're all about.
Well, talking of value, you have delivered an incredible amount of value to our listeners and to me, Juan, just in this conversation. And I'd love to get you back on the show to go deep on some of the topics that we talked about there. I feel like we've only just scratched the surface of some of your incredible knowledge and wisdom that you can share with us there. Thank you, my friend. So Juan, we asked our audience, our community, the managed service community, if they had any questions for you. And an interesting one came in from Nick Roundtree. He said, great to hear Juan is on as a guest. I'm looking forward to hearing from him. I'd be interested to hear Juan's views on how often MSPs should perform a stack review, especially with regards to cybersecurity solutions. And he goes on to say, new security products always seem to be being launched. Microsoft seem to be capturing a chunk of the marketplace with their Defender suite offerings. Is it time to ditch traditional AV vendors? So a two-part question there.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I would say, you know, one of the things and one of the biggest successes was I rebuilt my business methodology every year. So every year I would look at it in December. It's a quiet month. It's always time for us to revisit. It's not like we're going to be getting a whole lot of new customers. So I would spend time looking through the last year, what happened, and then building the future plan for you know, whatever the next FY year was. That being said, that month, we would always look at every vendor and go through a vendor due diligence process. So I encourage everybody to continuously do that. Here's the reasons why. Your customers are going to ask you, why are you using that product? What are you going to say? Because I heard about them at a trade show, and I actually went on with a roadshow with SureWeb, and I remember saying this in at Exchange. Just because a vendor checks a box doesn't mean they put checks in your mailbox.
Right.
Right. I may not be making money with this product. So is this, am I doing this just out of necessity? Am I supporting something because I inherited it from a customer that came in? Like, what is your product and how are you doing it? You have to refine that every year. Like the new security products, I waited 2 years to launch security. You want to know why? I waited because my customers, my contracts, my sales team, my support team, everybody that was internal to me was not ready. So I waited until my contracts, my liability, my insurance, my team, my sales team, my VCIOs, my talk tracks, my battle cards, every single thing was ready when I launched that product. And that netted me $1.5 million in net new revenue in 12 months. So when you think about why you do something, do it for a reason. Your vendor due diligence should have all of the best of the best. And I would make this a process. I talked about this earlier. I'd make that process somebody's job. Review all the top vendors. Here are the five criteria that I'm interested in applying to this methodology. Make sure that they meet them, bring them to us, present them. And then we will vote as a community on which ones we like. And then we'll have a bake-off to see which one wins. And we will then at that time have a story to tell our customers on why we chose this vendor. And here is the research. Here are all the ones. Here are the benefits. Here's the analysis. Here's all the data points. Here's the cost breakdown. Here is the best use case. As a managed service provider, we have to manage to deliver a high level of service to our customer. You have to have the data on how you made that decision. So rather than just say, I just picked it out of a hat, does it look shiny? That isn't going to work.
Yeah.
That is the one thing I will say. So every year I would spend time, every year revisiting, always looking at new nuances. And that helped me to sharpen the edge of my business to see when I cut, does it cut cleanly? Or do I leave jagged edges on that thing? So it's just one of those things that I highly encourage everyone to do every year. Again, I like what they said. Is it time to ditch legacy vendors and move on to something else? I don't know the answer for your business because that is predicated on the dictation of what your customers' needs are, because it's very subjective in terms of their compliance, regulatory, governance needs. Not everything that sounds the same is the same. An apple is not an apple in cybersecurity. An orange is not an orange. So you have to understand all the nuances and what you're trying to solve for, and making sure that you are solving the compliance, you are solving the governance, you are solving the regulatory aspects. And how does that product that you're using equal your success and their success in moving them forward? So again,
It's a great conversation to have. Again, here's another one, Richard, I think we could dive more into, but I love the question and I'm glad that I hopefully could answer it in a way that's meaningful.
Excellent. Thank you, Juan. And thank you, Nick, for the question. Now, there's going to be a lot of people who are already fans of you who are going to know what I already knew, which is you're an awesome human being. There's going to be a load of new people who have become fans of yourself as well, though, as a result of this. So for anybody listening who wants to continue the conversation with you, where's the best place for them to find you online?
Yeah, by all means, come over to the Super Ops community. You can find me there. You can also find me on LinkedIn a lot. I'm there. That's where I live. I don't have any other channels that I focus on. I'm very deliberate on making sure I respond to folks. So, and also shoot me an email, juan.fernandez@superops.com. Or if you want, shoot me a text, 505-270-6558, or add me in WhatsApp. I mean, I'm always open to conversations, as Richard knows, any time of day or night. So anyone needs help, I'm here to help.
We recorded a few weeks ago Tub Talk 150 with my great friend Craig Sharp from Birmingham-based MSP Abusi. Craig gave his email address out on air, and I said, dude, you are a brave individual, knowing how many people this goes out to. You've just gone one step further. You've given your email address and your cell phone number out on air.
Yeah, I didn't know, but that's just who I am, right? I'm willing to give as much as willing people are needing to learn, and I'm so happy to be able to collab. So just by all means, if anyone does need help, reach out.
I think it speaks to who you are. Thank you so much for your time today, Juan. This has been an incredible episode, and we'll look forward to having you back again in the future. You have an open invite to come on anytime that you want.
I look forward to it, Richard. It's amazing, and I love being here. So happy to jump back in anytime, brother.
Thank you. Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tubblog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback.